This is the Midday 180, queued up by Edley's Barbecue. With Jonathan Hutton, Chad Withrow, and Paul Kuharski.
Second half of the show is here. Midday 180, queued up by Edley's Barbecue. Chad Withrow, I'm looking at him in Mount Juliet. Paul Kuharski with the beautiful backdrop of all the Hat Show prints behind him in Brentwood. I'm Jonathan Hutton in Murfreesboro. David Reed is the chairman of the board in Nashville. I believe we're all going to be represented. I say this because David's only been in one mixer. But I think we'll all be represented tomorrow night. The final midday mixer presented by Nelson's Greenbrier Distillery. And if you haven't been involved in these and you'd like to, Chad, now is the time because the grand finale is tomorrow night.
Presented by Nelson's Greenbrier Distillery, home of the original Tennessee whiskey, as well as Bellmead Bourbon. We've got a ton of interest in this grand finale mixer, and we're working on a few special celebrity guests for this final mixer. We have told people the steps to take to join the mixer. When you know, you'll know. The people that we've responded to, you need to take those steps or your spots will be filled. Because we have people that message us, we tell you what to do, and then you don't go and do it. So then we don't have an accurate assessment of numbers in the room at that point. So people who have been on before know what I'm talking about. But all you need is to have availability between 8 to 10 p.m. tomorrow night, have access to Zoom either on your computer or on your phone, and have a desire to hang out with us, hear some stories, join the circle of trust. We're looking for first-timers, people that have not been involved in the Midday Mixer before. Again, we're going to have special guests. All you need to do if you're interested is slide up in our DMs. Message us on Twitter, on Instagram, on Facebook, if you want to take part in it. Again, for those who've already signed up and we've had a number of people, make sure you take the steps to sign up. And we will message you the instructions on how to make sure that you're in the Midday Mixer tomorrow night, 8 to 10. We're also going to limit it to 15 or 16 people because we want to make room for our special guest tomorrow night as well. So keep that in mind. Not many spots available right now. If you want in, message us, Midday 180 on Twitter and on Instagram.
Chad playing the part of a very firm bouncer there. A step short of the guy at Acme who forced everyone to line up against the wall despite the fact that there was no one on the street. Nevertheless, firm with his instructions about how to get in. It's not that it's not as difficult as he's making it. Blaze. Yes, he ran right down the street and got right to that guy. Hutton came into the other bar that we went to after we were dismissed from the line at Acme. He was arriving, heard this story. Where were we? We were at Corner Pub? No.
And it moved to Broadway. It was somewhere on Broadway. About two blocks down from Acme.
Broadway Brewhouse.
Hutton came in, heard the story, left. I was like, where's Hutton? Everybody like, I don't know. Everybody was in on it. He went down and interviewed this guy to get all the details he could for the show.
No, so what happened, we parked. Chad and I had just left the OVC tournament because we were calling the opening round games.
And I had hosted a night of my winning.
And that is where
this is a night where Reed met Lindsay.
Yes, we park.
Reed met Lindsay.
And we're coming down, Chad, I believe it was 2nd Avenue. We park on 2nd Avenue and you take a left on Broadway walking to the Broadway Brewhouse. I immediately go right because I'm going to Acme to interview the bouncer that had kicked Paul out before Paul was even allowed to go in.
I was kicked out before I got in. That's pretty hard to do.
It was a brilliant move on your part.
It was awesome.
I'll also say this about the Midday Mixer and people not doing the necessary steps to get in. And Hutton, we run into this time or two. I also feel like this is sort of the process of natural selection. For those can't take the technological steps to get in, that if you can't do this and we're having to explain ourselves over and over again on how to do this, you're probably going to no-show the mixer because you can't get into the room for whatever reason. So there's some good and bad with that, I would say. But again, this is a warning to those who have already signed up. Take the steps that we sent back in the message to make sure you're in the mixer. And for those that want to be in the mixer, simply message us on Twitter, on Instagram, on Facebook. We'll get back to you if you're in, and we will give you the steps. It's almost like an escape room, right? We'll give you the very simple steps. It's a very easy escape room to make sure that you're in our mixer room on Zoom.
He's raising the escape room, bringing up memories of how he lost to Don.
1 second. Chad beat the game with 1 second left on the clock. Coming up, Greg Cosell with the best film analysis you're going to get anywhere across this city. And we will have that at 12:20 with Greg Cosell from NFL Films. Coming up at 12:45, Paul discusses his puppy situation with Teresa and Simon, looking at puppies to add puppy number two to his house. I believe Simon will make an appearance. But right now, a reminder, Predators General Manager David Poile will join us tomorrow live at 12:15. But he joined us last week, and he gave his thoughts on the expanded playoff model. At the time, it was just a proposal that we now know features 24 teams, where the Predators will face off against the Arizona Coyotes in the opening round, the play-in round. Several players, including Matt Duchene, preferred to see the NHL come with a normal postseason with a best-of-seven playoff for all four rounds. But Poile thought the positives outweighed the negatives with what the league ultimately announced as official yesterday.
The model that was floated out there yesterday, I think, is fine. When I say that, believe me, that everybody's a great team player in all these concepts until it's about them and their team. And again, you're not going to please everybody. So starting off with, you're dropping seven teams to get to 24. There's people that think that maybe that number shouldn't be 24. It should be closer to 20, or maybe, as Matt Duchene says, to 16. But regardless, my position would be that I think we'd be fortunate, and I'd be very happy if we get back to play, to compete, have a chance to officially make the playoffs, to compete for the Stanley Cup. So that's where I'm at. I think it's complicated in that what's at stake here is we're going to start with 24 teams, so you're going to play, for all intents and purposes, it feels like some kind of a playoff round to get into the playoffs. And one of the considerations goes back to your draft position for the entry draft, which hasn't been decided yet. So if I was to win in, say we did this and we were to win in this playoff round in the playoffs, I would be very easy to accept that we will not have a lottery pick. We'll be in the playoffs, et cetera, et cetera. But we could get upset, like other teams could get upset in this playoff round, and that team right now has a lower pick than we do in the entry draft, and they would get into the playoffs. So there's a bunch of nuances that probably have to be still negotiated and straightened out. But like I said, on the surface, the format seems to be pretty fair to me.
Now that we know the format that Poile was chatting with us about last week is official, the next layer or storyline to consider surrounds teams getting prepared to play. We asked Poile to walk us through how his players were handling the conditioning aspect of all of this throughout the last few months, because a football player can run and work out for cardio purposes, but there is no replacement for skating on ice, even in the off season. And unless they're around a sheet of ice, they don't have many options. How many of the Predators players have had access to a sheet of ice to actually skate on?
Not very many. I think there's a few in Sweden. Their rules seem to be relaxed a little bit. I've got a couple guys in Canada that I understand have some access to skating. But as of today, we got 15 players that are in Nashville, and to my knowledge, none of them have skated. So, you know, right away, you have sort of an unlevel playing field, depending on where your players have been. And that's why, again, I think just using these dates, that please don't hold me to any of these dates, but just opening facilities and starting in June and having a longer runway to maybe an official training camp near the end of June, I think that will give everybody ample time to get in good shape. And as you said, the big thing that separates us from all other sports is the skating and the need to have that part of your conditioning for your legs, for your groins, and to hopefully keep the injuries in that area as low as possible before we actually get back to playing at a high level.
Joe Rexroad had a recent feature with The Athletic on Ryan Johansson that gave insight into why things were frustrating at times for him and why he wasn't playing well. We asked David Poile if he thought about his specific roster and some of the players who were struggling, either from a mental or physical standpoint, who are players who could benefit the most from this extended layoff?
Well, as I said before, there is such a thing as a silver lining in all of this. I think it's for our coaching staff and for some of our players. With the coaching change midway through the season, I think John Hines has had no time to sit down and develop, you with the players or with the staff. It's just, you know, we're playing every other night or back-to-back games. And during this this pause, if you will, I mean, he's had a lot of time to spend with his coaches and also with our players, since we have 15 players in Nashville, and he's met with every one of them. And I think from that standpoint, he getting to know them and talking about their year, their role, their expectations, our expectations, I would be very curious to see how we come back to play as a team, and specifically a lot of individuals. There's no question in my mind it's been an up and down season because of the inconsistency of some of our players, and specifically, you know, our top end forwards, the guys that are our highest paid players, the guys that are there to create our offense, are all having down years. I've never been part of a team where your top five forwards actually are having off years if you're just measuring things simply by statistics. And, you know, that's something that certainly could and should be better, and could, and I'm hopefully expecting will change when we get back to play here in this new format. And I'm looking for better things from individual players like a Ryan Johansson, who I read the article by Joe there, and, you know, I think Ryan owned it, if you will, in terms of how he was playing and what his own expectations are for himself. So, you know, words are one thing, and obviously actions are another. So let's see what happens. Let's give us that chance to get back and play and see if there's a little bit of difference in our team, and specifically some of the individual performances on our team.
Set a reminder, David Poile will join us at this time tomorrow here on the show. Every Wednesday at 12:15, we're joined by Greg Cosell, and we chat with one of the best analysts across the league next about some Titans opponents on the upcoming schedule. Midday 180, queued up by Edley's Barbecue, 104.5 The Zone. Midday 180, queued up by Edley's Barbecue. Greg Cosell joins us each and every Wednesday in the noon hour. He's been with NFL Films now for over 40 years. He loves the process of the NFL draft and building rosters across the league as he analyzes team by team. And he spent months evaluating the players that we'll discuss and continue to discuss here on the show. Greg, hope you're doing well this week.
Doing great, Jonathan. I think I'm up to 24 or 25 books that I've read. So, you know, watching all tape. Actually, today I took a little detour. You know what I'm watching today?
I wonder, what college are you watching today?
I'm actually watching Trey Lance, quarterback from North Dakota State, who all of a sudden I'm hearing a lot about.
Interesting. The next big quarterback from North Dakota State.
Yeah, people are, you know, again, I didn't know one thing about him. I've watched four games. Four games. Yeah, it's been pretty interesting.
And does he back up all the discussion that's circling his camp right now?
Level traits guy. I mean, he's a very, very talented guy, and he certainly, the athletic profile certainly fits the evolving mode of today's NFL quarterback. No question. I mean, he's got a really live arm. He's a super twitchy, explosive kid. He's got that playmaking dimension to his game. They run a ton of design run game concepts. So he kind of fits that mold. But he looks the part. He's a one-year starter, so this will be year two for him coming up.
Greg Cosell with us. We've been discussing the non-divisional opponents throughout the Titans schedule, and we make our way this week starting with the Detroit Lions, who will visit Nissan Stadium and be the last home game in the regular season. Greg, Detroit, they have room for a lot of upgrades. They definitely get a boost at corner and at running back with Jeffrey Okuda and DeAndre Swift joining their roster. Okuda would fit any defensive scheme. His size and his athleticism warranted a very high selection, and he helps out in a big way for that Lions secondary. I know you loved him throughout your draft evaluation of the Ohio State corner.
Yeah, the player he reminded me of, and again, as you guys know, I don't sit after I watch a guy for 15 minutes and think, who does he remind me of? It just kind of organically hits me. And he kind of reminded me the way he played what we call mirror match press man. He reminded me of Champ Bailey. Now, he's also very physical as well. He's a big corner, so he can jam you at the line of scrimmage. But he will be a day one starter. And keep in mind, the Lions last year, and they didn't play it particularly well, but the Lions last year played man coverage, I think, more than any team in the league, or maybe second. I think it was probably New England and Detroit who played the most snaps of man coverage. So I doubt New England will change, excuse me, Detroit will change anything dramatically. So Okuda made perfect sense for them. He can step right in. They also signed Desmond Trufant. So they have two solid outside corners now, which if you want to play man coverage, you absolutely need that.
General Manager Bob Quinn said that DeAndre Swift and Kerryon Johnson would complement each other well. And Swift's ability as a receiver, Greg, should give help to Matthew Stafford quite a bit.
Yeah, Swift was a really good prospect. I think he kind of reminded me just in the way that he could be deployed in the NFL, like a Dalvin Cook or an Alvin Kamara. Again, I'm not saying he's that guy as we speak, but just in terms of utilization, I think he's a really good runner, and I think that he has a lot of untapped potential as a receiver because he certainly showed he could do that. We'll see about Kerryon Johnson. Obviously, they drafted him in the second round 2 years ago to be kind of a bell cow back. He's had 3-4-game stretches showing that, but he's been hurt a lot. And quite frankly, Bo Scarborough, who's still on the roster, the former Alabama back, actually looked pretty good at times last year, but they definitely want that kind of back, whether it ends up being Johnson, if he can stay healthy, or Scarborough. I think they want a back that you can line up and pound the ball with.
Their third-round pick, Julian Aquara, a 4-year player at Notre Dame who is coming off of a broken leg, but he is a speed-to-power edge rusher that offers a lot of upside, Greg. He's a third-round pick that needs some polish to his game, but I'm intrigued to figure out how they use him, whether that's a 2- or 3-point stance, because it on paper, as I look at Detroit, it looks like 4-down linemen. I think they can use Aquara in a couple of different roles defensively.
Yeah, well, he certainly looks the part, Jonathan. I mean, he is long, he's athletic, he's rangy. He's got burst. He's got flexibility. Now, he needs a lot of work in terms of pass rush variety and working offensive tackles to be able to play with his hands and leverage. But he's got the traits you look for and the body type to be a quality edge rusher. So we'll see how quickly he can develop. He's just one of those guys that really looks the part, and you feel like you can take him and mold him into a real strong edge pass rusher.
Jonah Jackson, an interior offensive lineman that they plan on playing at right guard with Ragnow at center. Although Jackson, again, at guard, he could play both spots, though, couldn't he?
Well, he played guard as a 1-year starter at Ohio State. He transferred from Rutgers, and he was a guy that I actually watched pretty carefully, which I guess because I watched a lot of Ohio State. I think he can be a quality NFL starter at either guard or center. So I don't know exactly how they see Frank Ragnow, who's played both guard and center. But Jackson, I think, is a good prospect. He probably needs to get a little stronger. But I think there's a lot to like, and I think that he can be a good player. Now, their O-line has some questions. I think the two guard positions right now are kind of up in the air. So depending on Jackson's ability to come in and absorb what they're going to do and play with some physicality, which he needs to get stronger, he certainly would have a chance to win a starting job.
Final one on the Lions as we wrap up Detroit and move to Green Bay in just a moment. The Lions selected Quintez Cephas from Wisconsin on day 3. He was a productive receiver in the Big Ten. He's the slowest receiver at the combine. And what he has going for him at the combine before they were teammates, Jeffrey Okuda called Cephas the toughest matchup that he had from college. And I know you saw a player in him that was far better than those combine numbers because he uses his physicality very well on those short to intermediate routes.
Yeah, I thought that, he ran that 4.73 at the combine. I'm certainly not comparing him to Anquan Boldin, but Boldin ran a 4.72. Excuse me. And I remember being at the combine when Boldin ran that 4.72, and everybody in the building said, oh, he can't play in the league, no chance. Sorry, guys. But anyway, so Cephas, to me, his tape tells a totally different story. I think he has more than enough route quickness. He's physical as all can be. He created separation with his physicality. He did show some build-up speed, too. I mean, not a burner. He's not going to just line up and run by people. But there was something about this kid that I liked. I think he can find a place on an NFL roster. You know, there's a lot of receivers who get drafted, and a lot of receivers play in the NFL. Now, clearly, they've got their top three in Galladay, Jones, and Amendola. But after that, you know, they did sign Geronimo Allison from Green Bay. But after that, it's, you know, I think Cephas is going to make this roster, and I wouldn't be surprised if he gets an opportunity.
Next, Jordan Love was the Packers' top pick, a team that needed weapons for Aaron Rodgers, instead goes with the quarterback of the future. He had some difficulties in 2019 as compared to 2018. We'll start there as we break down what the Packers did in the draft with Greg Cosell. Next.
Midday 180, queued up by Edley's Barbecue. This is 104.5 The Zone. Every week, joined by Greg Cosell of NFL Films as we evaluate the film from what he's been watching this week. And our exercise weekly right now after the draft has been to evaluate the teams that are the non-divisional opponents on the Titans' schedule. And, Paul, that leaves us with the Green Bay Packers.
So, Greg, we've covered plenty of should they have or should they not have. Let's turn to what the Packers are getting in Jordan Love. His touchdown-to-interception ratio in 2018, 32-26, very impressive. Last year, it dropped to 20-17. Not the margin you would want in a first-round draft pick. What happened to him, and where is he on things like that coming into the league?
PK, I think you have to start with Matt LaFleur before you talk about Jordan Love, because Matt LaFleur is a young head coach whose early experience in the league was with Kyle Shanahan. And coaches coach what they know, especially young coaches. So Matt LaFleur's worldview is, your offense starts with a run game, and the play-action pass game works off of that. That is the reason, and we'll get to Love in a second, that is the reason they drafted A.J. Dillon with the second pick in the second-round pick. So they now have A.J. Dillon and Aaron Jones, a big-time backfield. It's the reason they drafted Josiah DeGuara from Cincinnati, an unknown player. They drafted him in the third round because he's going to be their Kyle Juszczyk. He can line up in the backfield, and he can line up as a movement player. And then they drafted Jordan Love, obviously, and traded up for him because the reality is, and I've talked about this for 5 years, about Aaron Rodgers. Aaron Rodgers, as talented as he is not a ball distributor. He doesn't play that way. Aaron Rodgers oftentimes plays his own game, and he's really good at it at times. But Matt LaFleur sees his offense like Kyle Shanahan sees his offense. Everything must be rhythmic and structured. The only time it's not rhythmic and structured is when the defense truly forces you not to be. And Love has ball distributor traits and a really live arm. And I think that's why this move was made. Now, Rodgers will be the quarterback this year for sure. And obviously, then it depends on what happens this year. But I think the feeling is Love will better execute what Matt LaFleur sees as his style of offense, which comes from Kyle Shanahan, who's gotten to two Super Bowls playing that style of offense.
As they build up to Love, whenever it is, as a ball distributor, do you anticipate they get him, Rodgers, in the meantime, and Love ultimately better people to distribute the ball to? It's well documented how little they've done with premium picks at receiver in particular.
And no question. And I think that Matt LaFleur probably believes that if the system is executed, that the receivers are not as maybe as important as obviously fans think, because they did not draft a receiver. And I think, again, he's relying on his background to believe that. Not that he wouldn't like really good receivers. Of course, you always like better players than not better players. But I'm not sure he saw it as quite the priority that maybe the fans did. We'll see what happens. I'm particularly intrigued with Jace Sternberger, a tight end they drafted 2 years ago in the third round, who I really, really liked. And I'm certainly not going to sit here and say he's George Kittle, but I think that Jace Sternberger has very good receiving traits. And assuming he's healthy, I think he could be a player to really watch in the context of their offense.
Greg, you mentioned A.J. Dillon, the Packers' second-round pick. 6 foot, 247 pounds out of Boston College. In context of LaFleur's offense, how do you see him factoring into that? And is he the type of player that maybe gets a lot more value if he comes out in the draft 20 years ago, let's say, as opposed to today's game?
Yeah, I mean, certainly, you've hit it right on the head. I mean, we're in an era in which running backs are not viewed as priority players in the NFL, unless they have absolutely special traits. Now, Dillon is the same weight as Derrick Henry. Dillon is a little different back. He's not as vertically explosive as Henry. Henry can run away from people. But I think that Dillon is a little shiftier in confined space than Derrick Henry. Henry is built differently. When I walked by A.J. Dillon at the scouting combine in Indianapolis, I was amazed that he was 247 pounds. He doesn't look like that. So he's a little lighter on his feet in confined space than Henry because of Henry's build. Henry is very long-legged. But Dillon is strong. He's powerful. He's a grinder. He's got much lighter feet than you would think, given his 247 pounds. So I think they have two backs now in their mind. And keep in mind, Aaron Jones showed last year that he can detach from the formation. You can split him outside. He's a really good route runner and receiver. So I think they're building the offense the way Matt LaFleur sees it.
You mentioned Jace Sternberger there. And you mentioned the third-round pick, Josiah DeGuara. I've seen him talked about a little bit as a fullback. They've got Mercedes Lewis. They've got Sternberger, as you mentioned. A lot of people thought DeGuara maybe overdrafted. What kind of skill set does he bring in, and how do you picture him used in this offense, considering, again, that they didn't bring in much wide receiver help? How much can he help the passing game as a target, or how much is he a guy that's going to be in there helping block?
Yeah, he's an interesting player, and he's probably a very scheme and team-specific player, which is why the Packers drafted him where they did. Because if you just look at him as a tight end, he lacks the desirable size, length, athletic ability that you normally like to have. But, you know, I think that he could effectively fill that role of that sort of movement tight end H-back because he's pretty athletic, not highly athletic, but pretty athletic. He's a good route runner. He's a good receiver. He's highly competitive as a blocker, and I guarantee that stood out to the Packers. So he's not a true tight end, and they'll probably list him as a fullback, but I think he'll be sort of their Juszczyk kind of player. Juszczyk could line up in the backfield for the 49ers. He could line up flexed as a tight end. He could be a wing tight end. You could split him out. I would see DeGuara as that kind of player for Green Bay.
They had several sixth rounders, one of which went to select Michigan offensive lineman John Runyon. Obviously, his dad, a big part of Oilers history, including Tennessee Oilers, and was on the Super Bowl team here. How much of a chip off the old block is John Runyon, who's now part of the Packers? We know he didn't come in with the same high pedigree as a sixth rounder. How much of a chance you give him?
Well, he played left tackle in Michigan last year, and he was a pretty competitive kid. He's probably going to be seen as a guard in the NFL, and I think he's a kid with an opportunity to play. Look, you know, last year they played their rookie Jenkins, who started at guard, and I think played pretty well, if memory serves me correctly. But I think they probably will have a battle at the two guard spots. Jenkins will probably win one of them. John Runyon will get an opportunity to compete at the other, and we'll see. I mean, he's, you know, you don't have to be obviously as light on your feet and as nimble at the guard position as you do at the outside tackle position. And so he'll compete for a spot there.
Greg Cosell, weekly with us here on the show. Greg, thank you as always. Hope you have a good week, and we will catch up again next week.
All right, guys. Really appreciate it. Thanks so much.
Yeah, thank you, Greg. Follow Greg on Twitter, @GregCosell. Coming up, we know how the show ended yesterday, where we thought Paul was headed to get a puppy against his own judgment, against his rule that, you know, they have a dog. What happened over yesterday evening and then this morning? Simon Kaharski weighs in with Simon Says. Next, Midday with Eddie, queued up by Edley's Barbecue, 104.5 The Zone. Between the start of Tuesday's Midday 180 and our sign-off, Paul learned his wife and son were looking at puppies online, looking to add a new addition to the family and a friend to join Loyal Finley in their home. PK is against the idea. He says they have a dog, but a Twitter poll was posted, and at some point last night, Paul and Simon recorded reaction to the online feedback. Simon has grown up on this show. He's great at providing his opinions on big issues. So you better believe we needed his take on why he should be in consideration for dog number two. We hope you enjoy Midday 180's latest edition of Simon Says.
I'm with Simon Kaharski, who's in a play tonight. His first play with lines, is that correct?
Yes.
Are we excited about this play?
I'm nervous.
Nervous. So you do it first?
Not the Simon Says on that.
We're discussing him in the pirate play.
Which he was kind of looking forward to, if I remember correctly.
He was kind of nervous. It came off well. His buddy Frank had a starring role in that play. Frank sang a little bit. He went, Frank was very good.
Then Simon, was the play the VeggieTales, then the Pirates Who Don't Do Anything? Because that's what Evie's into right now.
No,
is it
a
similar play?
No VeggieTales. It was very good play at getting tons of kids involved with minimal lines, but very inclusive. I enjoyed it thoroughly. I can't remember exactly what it was called.
Now let's try that again with Simon Says Puppy.
The Puppy Report, Episode 1. This is Paul Kaharski with Simon Kaharski.
Hi.
Not too many hours after this puppy push came to light. And we're here to check in with Simon to see how he feels everything is going. How are you tonight, sir?
I'm pretty good.
What brought this puppy interest to the forefront?
I've been wanting a puppy for a long time. I just haven't said anything because of COVID. I realized that the puppy store would be closed, and what's the point of asking? But now things are reopening, and everyone's saying it's a good time to get a puppy because of you're staying in, so like you can train it and stuff. And I agree with that.
Who is this mysterious everyone you are speaking of?
Everyone, like Mr. Chad said it would, I mean, whoever said yes said it would be good.
Yeah, but that was after you asked for this puppy.
Yeah.
Beforehand, who was the everyone that was saying it's a good time to get a puppy?
He said it when we were on the show when I was on the show last.
Okay, so how do you feel things are going so far?
Pretty good. I have 75% of the people saying I should get a puppy on the Twitter poll.
So you like the popular support is
good.
But you know that vote is non-binding.
Well, yes it is. I said if it were good and I got a puppy, I mean, and it said I would get a puppy, then we like use it. But if not, then no.
Then we don't use it.
Mm-hmm.
If it's not in your favor, then it's garbage.
Yeah, pretty much.
All right. So what else do you think about like the family conversation so far and everything?
Me and Mom are for it. You're just the one that doesn't want to do it.
And so we looked at some puppies on a couple of websites today.
Yeah.
You've got a couple favorites. There was a Gavin dog that looked pretty good.
Yeah, he's my favorite.
Well, you've called a couple dogs your favorite.
Well,
you've got Gavin,
the Gavin one was my favorite,
Duffy.
Then Duffy second, and the other ones, like third and fourth, the other two I showed you.
There was a good dog on there named Finley.
Yeah, he was just like Duffy, except he had a brown spot on his eye.
One of my concerns is that all of these dogs are going to grow up out of this cute puppyhood and be as big as Finley.
Well, yeah, but they can't stay puppies forever.
No, but I want a small dog if we were to get a dog.
Yeah, I know, and we're getting a small dog.
No, I want a small dog that stays small, not a puppy that doesn't stay small.
We get to watch him grow up. That sounds good to me.
I've been doing that with you. Now I want something that's small and stays small.
Well, you can't always get what you want.
Will you check back with the Midday 180 and give us periodic updates of how this whole thing is going, even if you don't get exactly what you want?
No.
I'll take that as a yes.
I said no.
All right. We'll hear back soon from Simon Kuharsky, special Midday 180 correspondent. Any final words?
Yeet.
I knew that was coming. You're very predictable.
Simon says puppy, and by listening to that, Paul, it sounds like you're signing off on it reluctantly.
No, I'm not signing off on a dog that's going to get as big as our current dog. I'm definitely not doing that. Here is my
vision. Like you're getting puppy too, though.
Listen, here's my first off, all these places are closed, so you can't go to the Humane Society and walk around and meet a dozen dogs. Right? Everybody's fostering a dog. You can go see one dog. Well, I can't. I need to see a lot of dogs if I'm getting a dog. Ask Teresa how long it took me to settle on Finley. We went to like 15 places and it took a long time. And these are places where I could see a bunch of dogs. I can't go house by house to foster dogs and see one dog at a time. That's not going to work for me. Also, my plan, kind of like my scenario in my head, was after Finley lived a good full life and then there was some time, then we would get, you know, something like a, and I'm handing in my man card, a Maltese, or like Brad Willis, our former program director, has this Shih Tzu Bichon. These are very much non-manly lap dogs who are little. David's standing and looking at me. David's with me. He's got a little dog. I want a little dog to sit on my lap all the time, not be a pain in the ass. Non-barker. Finley's a barker. That's his one downside. And
small dogs are yappers.
Well, Teresa and I looked before Simon was up at Maltese rescues today, and they all looked ratty, like they'd been through the ringer, and they weren't puppies. They were adults. I don't want it. So everything's too complicated.
Ratty.
Find me a Maltese puppy. That's not $2,000. That's the other thing. Then we looked at Maltese puppies. They're $2,000. I'm not spending $2,000 on a second dog. I have a dog.
Chad, your thoughts?
Well, my first thought is that did Simon Kuharsky have a case of chutting in the beginning when he said Mr. Chad said you needed to get a dog? When I'm pretty sure it was Mr. Jonathan.
Yeah, I was like, no. Mr. Chad's the one that said we should shoot Finley.
Yes. Euthanized at all costs.
Years ago.
But I will say this. Look, I'm the most anti-dog on the show, but my first thought was when you're talking about the ratty Maltese and you don't want one that's not a puppy, I'm thinking, boy, I feel bad for those adult dogs that don't have a home because they need a home too.
I do too.
So I think you're being very insensitive.
I'm being very insensitive. I adopted one of those dogs 13 years ago. I adopted one. Now I'm the bad guy.
Good enough for you now.
Now I'm the bad guy. He's plenty good enough. I'm content with my dog life. I adopted a rescue dog who was found in Nunley. Where's Nunley? I have no idea. Anybody know? We found him. He was from Nunley. We adopted him. We did our part. We're a rescue dog family. Now I'm a bad guy because I won't rescue a second dog and I can't choose to have a puppy?
Well, you're a bad guy because you called the dogs ratty and said because they were not puppies, they were not worthy of a home.
I want much of our listening audience to go save these dogs. I won't be saving these dogs. I've already saved a dog. Now maybe I'll get a puppy.
Nunley is in Hickman County, close to Centerville.
All right.
Oh, okay.
In case you were curious, yeah.
Maybe we'll just go out and walk around Nunley and wait to find a great puppy. It's worked before.
What do you think, Reed?
Paul, I think if you want my man card because my dog weighs 8 pounds, why don't you come take it from me?
I'm just saying, I'm sure when you got that dog, you knew some people were going to say it wasn't the most, you know, you should have a Great Dane, a guy like you. These stereotypes, Reed, that are quite frankly were inappropriate at the beginning and are outdated. I'm with you.
I don't care. I want a Maltese. I think they're great. My sister-in-law had one, and I loved when I was in Greenville, South Carolina, having this dog on my lap. And that's why I want one of these dogs, if I'm getting a dog, which I'm not agreeing to.
So last night I let Lindsay listen to this conversation before it aired today, and her suggestion was for us to bring Arby to you for a couple days and let you try to convince Simon that this was the type of dog that you need. That's against my better judgment. If you would like to have Arby, a small dog, around the house for a couple days, I will loan him to you.
Here's my other, I like that idea. Here's my other big thing. The final say here belongs to Finley. So if we go get some puppy and we bring him home without returnability, and Finley, in a week, hates this idea, then I've ruined the final years of Finley's life. Finley, a dog I adopted, love, don't pay enough attention to. He's got a nice house. He's got a nice electric fence. He's got a nice setup. And then he's screwed because this puppy comes in. Now, what kind of puppy, what kind of dog dad am I if I do that?
I found it humorous that you want a dog that doesn't bark much and that's not ratty when it gets older, but you're going with a, what dog are you going with?
Maltese. I don't think they bark a ton.
Small dogs bark way more than large dogs do. Way more.
I've never known a small dog to not bark a lot.
Well, I obviously haven't done all of my research, largely because I'm not necessarily getting a dog.
Oh, you're getting a dog. It's already been determined based on your mood and temperament in that conversation. Simon talked you into it at the end.
Well, I will say, Teresa and I watched the Jerry Seinfeld new special on Netflix over Memorial Day weekend, which was excellent. And yeah, he does a thing about tone in marriage and how important tone is, how he never realized that he had a tone and all this stuff until he got married. And when I was talking to Teresa before Simon was up this morning, I'm like, my God, your tone is amazing right now. When she was talking about the dog and showing me, we were looking at Maltese on her computer. I was like, this is the Seinfeld tone conversation, except the good side of it. Like, so your tone's never been better.
You went to bed and recorded that prior to bed last night with Simon, then woke up and your wife was flipping through dog ideas?
No, we were having a morning conversation and I said, we don't need to get another dog. There's no reason for us to get another dog. After Finley's gone, we can get a Maltese like Mary has. And she started tapping away looking at the Maltese. She's like, okay, we'll find a Maltese puppy. Yes,
Paul, you've been you're being very naive to not understand that you have been outvoted officially and that you will be getting a dog. That this is a done deal. There is no turning back now. The dog will happen.
Not everything is democratic in every house. Sometimes a 2-1 vote goes in favor of the one. Trust me, I know this. I see Teresa win votes where she's outvoted all the time. This could be me winning a vote where I'm outvoted.
Nothing has been determined. Maltese are the dogs with like the white hair that looks like Gandalf's beard, Chad, I think. I think
a lot of hair over their eyes, not under their chins.
Looks like the Kung Fu master in Kill Bill in those old movies with the white beard. And that's what that dog looks like, is that face.
Somebody tweet us a long beard. Somebody tweet us a nice picture of a Maltese. And I expect listeners to solve all these problems. Somebody put up a Maltese puppy that needs adoption, who's well behaved and doesn't bark. Also, one of these said you can't have an electric fence. Well, I've got an electric fence.
What?
Don't tell me. I just like ignored that. You're not going to tell me what kind of fence I'm going to have.
So we've gone from yesterday not having a dog to you're not going to tell me what fence I have in my yard to keep my dog at home.
If Paul, I'm getting another dog, you're not telling me what kind of fence I'm going to have.
Midday 180, queued up by Edley's Barbecue, 104.5 The Zone.